Banjani, everyone. This is Professor Amin-Ra, Professor Emeritus, California State University, Long Beach, Africana Studies Department, where I taught for 34 years, along with a retired professor from Compton Community College, where I taught for 10 years, both simultaneously, former city councilman, former Compton College Board of Trustees, and former Compton Unified School District, along with my co-host, Joe Hembrick, longtime educator for the Linwood Unified School District and Compton Unified School District, with the first African-American head coach for Linwood, an administrator and a teacher, Compton Unified on all levels, retired, emeritus, really, a emeritus Compton Unified School District teacher and administrator, and along with Sister Linda Shorter, museum curator of a virtual museum about inventions of Black people that made a difference in life and health and just their contribution to the fourth floor of humanity. And with our platform provider, Rashaki Maskani, longtime educator for Compton Unified School District, longtime intellectual activist from the standpoint of working with young people as well as educating people to the realities of life. He envisioned a way to make a contribution to our consciousness and liberation, so he created a platform called Community Education Network, in which Conscious Corner is a part of. The Conscious Corner name came from Joe Hembrick, and our job is to speak truth to the people first, speak truth to power second, and speak truth to counter the lies, the distortions, the devastation of the news and the misrepresentation and the maulers of the news and of the truth called the United Snakes of America. And this podcast broadcast and misrepresentation, and as Malcolm said, hypocrisy on every level of social institutions. We welcome you here to the Black Conscious Corner this February, Black History Month, 2023. And we're going to start off with good news. If anybody has anything they want to say that they thought Black people made achievements in and or frontline news where they participated in struggle and liberation activities. We want to thank Rashaki for having one of the Marleys on this past Saturday. Very deep and very inspirational presentation by the presenter at that time, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But we're going to start. Linda, you have any good news or any frontline news?
Any frontline news? And actually, this is not my category, but I'm excited because I just learned that it's two Black quarterbacks in the Super Bowl. And look, you know, I only look at football once a year, and that's during the halftime more than anything. But when they told me it's two Black quarterbacks, I'm excited.
Okay. That's a good thing, because at one time they didn't let none of us quarterback, middle linebacker, or center. I forget his name, Pittsburgh and Shaq Harris was one of the first pioneers back in the NFL back in the early 70s. And Joe may have some information on that, Brother Hembrick, but that's good. And that is historic, and they're making a lot of it. I remember Brother went to Grambling, who was
Doug Williams. Is that who? Just because he from St. Pete.
Yeah,
my brother used to hang out with him. That's why I know Doug Williams. That's the only reason I got excited about football.
Yeah, he I think they won the Super Bowl when he was playing.
Oh yeah, they did. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was the first Black quarterback. Well, that's good news. What about you, Big Joe? You hear any good news? Any front line?
Just to straighten out the historical fact, we got one and a half black quarterback playing in
Ah.
Okay.
One and a half, but I'll take that. And the Joe you were speaking about was Joe Gilliam, Jeff
Yeah.
Gilliam with the Steelers.
Yeah.
But I just want to mention brother Marlon Briscoe, who back in the 60s, I think the first time that Denver went to the Super Bowl, their quarterback got hurt, and his brother Marlon Briscoe, who's from LA, was a wide receiver, and they had to put him in, and he ended up playing in the game, although they lost, and he did a great job. But the next year, they put him back at receiver. They wouldn't let him remain at quarterback. But the first one to really play in National Football League was Pollard, and who they have the Rooney Rule named after. He matter of fact, they used to have to sneak him in the stadium, and they would tell him not to take his helmet off so the fans couldn't tell he was black. They'd be stoning him and throwing all kind of stuff at him. But
Who do you play? What he was the first black to play football in the NFL. He wasn't quarterback though.
Pollard. I can't remember what team, because back then in those years, the teams had different names.
Okay.
Can't recall. You can Google him though. Fritz Pollard is his name.
Okay.
Pollard. But what I like to bring historically, this is on this date is the anniversary in 1820 that the free blacks in America and some slaves went back on the Mayflower to Sierra Leone and started their own settlement on this day in 1820. A lot of, blacks went back and didn't come back. It's kind of the powers that be, the corporations end up getting their hands on them like they do, and kind of control things. That was the undermining of the Garvey movement. And Garvey was trying to go back. They had promised to let it settle, and then Firestone Rubber pulled the plug on the whole situation. But that happened on this date in 1820.
Okay. What about you, Rashiki?
Yes, I just want to piggyback on what you said, Professor Ra. We had Rohan Marley on, and I want to show share the screen so people can see where they could go and get it on YouTube. It's on the website also. Well, there it is. We had Rohan Marley on Saturday, and real good show. Real good show. I encourage people to check it out. Now, I also want to give homage to his father. His father's birthday is today. Bob Marley's birthday is today.
Okay, yeah, we gotta recognize that, brother. That's good
And
news.
international revolutionary superstar in music, and his message was very powerful. Inspired a lot of people of the earth to stand up, get up, stand up for your rights. And you can put him in the category of King and Malcolm. He's very popular internationally. Probably the best known artist all over the world in the 20th century. Yeah, very inspirational. I mean, I, along with Professor Ra and Bob Marley and Neely Fuller and they, those are people I look up to.
Good.
Highly inspirational folks. So we hope to see Rohan Marley back on the platform. So we enjoyed him, and I appreciate everybody that came out to dialogue with him.
Okay. Well,
And
no. Go
go
ahead.
ahead.
No, it's
That's
on you.
it.
Well, I just wanted to share some good news and frontline news. First of all, we want to pay homage to the struggle of Memphis, Tennessee, the efforts of the masses of people that demonstrated nationwide over the killing of Tyree Nichols, beat to death by the police. And it was massive demonstrations in major cities nationwide. And that's a thing, because one of the challenges we had in the 70s when they killed Eula Love and Larry Morris choked him out in his bathroom, LAPD, and all the killings in there, Ron Settles and all of that. We tried to nationalize the movement of police killings of Black people. And we couldn't get no tractions because they would settle the case right away. And once they settled the case with the parents, the issue of arresting the police and looking at police culture was never brought up on a national level, even though there were killings nationally. So we thank the people for demonstrating from Ferguson all the way. And there was a beautiful ceremony where victims of police, families of the victims of police killings were attendant. George Floyd's brothers and family members, Breonna Taylor, the brother that was killed in New York over the cigarettes, his rap representatives were there. It was just a good showing of unity and shining the light on a national level, national news coverage of the culture of police with regards to the disregard of Black life and their turning traffic stops into murder. We want to thank them for that. Second, we want to thank Brother Colin Kaepernick, Colin Kaepernick. His foundation is providing funds for families who can't afford it to get independent autopsies on controversial police death. So his foundation will pay for the independent autopsies for families that can't get it done, or attorneys that can't get it done for the families. And where the families don't bear that expense with the attorneys who would hire their own of this nature. And that's a good move on this part. Second, I don't know if any of you ever heard of Third World Press. Any of you ever hear of Third World Press?
That's Kaepernick.
I've heard, yes.
Third World Press is out of Chicago. It was ran by one time Juanza Kanjufu and Mahadi Bhuti, and they published most of the Black conscious books, and they had a magazine out called Black Books Bulletin in the early 70s. Very interesting articles where Black people could publish their articles and things. Well, they had a flood and they had a bunch of problems. Tyree Irvin went over there and wrote a $50,000 check to them to help them in their fundraiser. I thought that was good. Tyree does a lot. As I said, he gave $50,000 also to the Sister Clara Muhammad School, as well as other philanthropic activities that he participated in. He just recently got traded from the New York Nets to the Mavericks, the Dallas Mavericks basketball team. But Tyree Irvin, they criticized him a lot because he wouldn't take the shot. He set out a season and lost money. He also donated to the women's basketball, NBA basketball, helped supplement their salaries during the pandemic. And so those are some of the things that he has done. We also want to recognize the the role of attorney Ben Crum and Al Sharpton at the ceremony of Tyree, how they really tied it up with regards to their commentary. I don't know how many people watched the whole service, but it was a lot of points made and some major points made. Anybody saw the service? Linda, did you see the service?
No, no, I did not.
Joe, did you get there?
I watched 2 or 3 minutes of it.
Yeah, I know.
I watched some clips on Democracy Now, and yes, you are correct, Professor Ra. They made some great points. This is one of the first times that I really enjoyed their commentary. Really excellent, excellent points, and it was wonderful what I saw.
Oh well, yeah, and that was a strong position that they took, hardline position, and also helping people reconcile how even though the officers who beat Tyree Nichols to death also. And they were African Americans, and he was an African American. How they still tied race? They were acting out of racist perspective, even though they were black. You know, when Fannie Lou Hamer was jailed, they made a black inmate beat her where she couldn't have kids and lost her eye. The same thing with overseers. During the Holocaust of enslavement, they used black. Even in South Africa, a large percentage of the police were black because, you know, they were just under pressure. And so, but they tied it to them as collaborators and having agency that they would not have beaten a white policeman, I mean, a white kid, the way they beat to death Tyree. That because they were vulnerable as black people, they did not have the consciousness that they were black. They were acting as police to, in white neighborhoods, police are to serve and protect. In black communities, they're to serve, protect, and suppress. And that was some beautiful analysis that Ben Crump, and he said that he's hoping that Tyree Nichols' case will be a model for other cities when police shoot killing are controversial to act swiftly, as he said. We want swift justice, swift transparency, and swift. And Ben Crump named all the people practically that have been killed by police as he made his commentary. And Al Sharpton, who I very seldom listen to, but I listen to the services just paying homage to Tyree, because his mother and their father and his father, they were some strong people. I mean, they say, I mean, this sister said, I feel sorry for those police. She didn't forgive them, but she said she feels sorry for them because their lives are ruined and their families are going to suffer. Because they were breadwinners, many of them. And then the Omegas suspended three of them, kicked them out of their organization. But mostly are the Miss Arivon Nichols, Wells, Arivon Wells, she, Rovon Wells, something like that, and Mr. Rodney Wells. They were just strong people taking hardline positions, but at the same time calling for peace, but at the same time putting it in analysis when she said, you shamed, these police shamed their families, shamed the community, and shamed the black nation, the black community and the black nation, black people as a whole. And that was just strong. And, you know, that was a good presentation. But tonight we're going to talk about Black history. And we're going to start with historian Joe on why history is important and what is the significance of Black History Month. Joe, how do you see it as a historian?
Well, you know, I gotta, you know, we just want to keep it mostly in America, and I'm opposed to that. I'm about going all the way back to see, you know, what the examples were, you know, before we got here, which I think is the key to us totally reviving ourselves. You know, it's been tainted, you know, because of who we learned from. You know, we have accomplishments, correct, and you know, where we came from those chains. But I think the key to our total liberation is getting back to what we were about before we met any other people, and just knowing the truth about all of that. And then maybe I think we'll have a good chance of, you know, reviving ourselves. I don't want to get into other particulars about what has us so caught up where we can't advance as far as we could. You know, I call it drinking the Kool-Aid, but I'm not going to get into that because it might offend some people. But it's my position that everything we've learned from these mutated people, which were us at one time. That's another part of it that we need to clarify and bring out the historical significance of that, is that these mutated Europeans, you know, were once us. I know there's a lot of philosophical, a lot of religious doctrine from certain groups about some doctrine, venom, and all of that. But you go back, you know, historically, in 1500 BC, when that thing from the sky hit the earth and started those, those ice ages, and, you know, they had to interbreed with each other, these Africans, but then, you know, produced albinism, which is, you know, how they get white rats in the lab, you know, that they interbreed them. And, you know, results in albinism, then those albinos then are breeding all the to produce them. And also like to mention that, you know, anybody that has raised dogs, you know, when you interbreed dogs, the brothers and sisters and mothers, this type of thing, they end up being kind of crazy. And that's what some folks do, you know, that end up fighting them. They interbreed them because, you know, they're out there when you interbreed dogs like that. And with the albinism and the interbreeding explains why those former Africans are like they are. And, you know, we need to, like I said before, get back to what we were about before we met any other folks on the planet. And then we and see where we were and where we need to go. But I try to, you know, the African American stuff is good and great. I like to, if we talk about that, you know, Garveyism and Malcolm is where I like to go with that. And that's about all I got to say on the subject right now.
So, why do you think it's important?
Because we don't know thyself. That's why we, you know, stuff we know is from we got is from, you know, the person that brought us here. Value, you know, you're in his system. Yeah, his values and what, for the most part, I know they. I ain't talking about the, you know, Republican values, but American apple pie and all of that. You know, we. You know, we're from a village style of background. But here, it's very materialistic, get how much money you can get, and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Right side of the brain, so to speak, as far as what our ancient ancestors were about. And for a big part, we're not with nature, which is our thing. We don't know it, but it is. Nature is what was before any religion or God thing ever came into being. And the number one thing that produces life is that sun, which we don't even want to be in that. And that's just my perspective from my studies and what I see. And that's what I do for myself. And I try to let others know. But like I said, we caught up drinking the Kool-Aid in a lot of instances with certain things, and we'll never be able to see it.
So when you say Kool-Aid, what's in the Kool-Aid?
Thus said the Lord and all that, and the Assalamu alaikum and all of that. You know, prior to that even coming to existence, you know, the matrilineal society, the females were that. And when, you know, when those religions sprang up, and they're just borrowed carbon copies from ancient African stuff anyway. I could do a whole, you know, show on that. But I don't want to offend people, but I'll just say this, and I'm going to leave it alone. Until you study your ancient African history, you can't see it.
Can I say something, Mr. Hendrick? Joe?
Go ahead.
Brother Joe.
Go ahead.
The information that you give us, it's information. We have to be able to take other people's perspective. If you want to do a show on the before the coming of the European and the philosophy and the religious texts and all of that, let's do it. It's information, and we need to hear this because there's more to it than just what people think. There's so much information out there, it's ridiculous. And if it make, I'll just say you wouldn't be offending nobody. If they take offense to it, that's on them. But we here to learn, so I advocate you do it. So Professor Rob, what do you say?
I'm encouraging him to put it in language we can all understand. You know, and as Malcolm would say, I think that there's no, he would not be the first to criticize the role of religion and oppression. And he wouldn't, and he's not going to be the last. There's a lot of African people that are atheistic, non-religious. Most Black people are non-religious. They don't go to church, but they, you know, they may believe in a spirituality, but, you know, they, you know, churches are for Christians. Mosques are for Muslims, and synagogues are for Jewish people, as Dr. Ben said, in the three major religions. And there were people that believed in animism, animated aspects of life, way before organized religion came about. And I think that Joe can talk about Maat, the Yoruba perspective. There are many people that still keep up with the tradition. European, like it's called, some people believing in voodoo and black magic, but that's their spirituality. Native American saw spirituality different from the European. Most people do, because they don't believe that hell is a reality you're going to burn forever and all that type of stuff. You ain't even did nothing to nobody. So we encourage Joe to whenever he finishes research or feel like he's ready to make those presentations, I look forward to it. And then, Mashinda, how you doing?
Good evening, Brother Alvin Ross. How you doing?
We're talking about the relevancy and the meaning of Black History Month. What do you think? Is it relevant? Because some people say Black History should be celebrated every day. And you know the people that do all that.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, it's all about intention. You know, I think that, you know, what was it, Carter G. Woodson, who coined the Negro History Week. You know, I think he had great intentions. You know, I think just recognizing accomplishments and especially during that time, the struggle, I mean, the struggle has been going on for a while, you know. So I'm thinking that when he, you know, brought that up and asked, you know, everybody to partake in that, you know, that week, you know, I think that was a positive gesture. Well, more than a gesture. I think, you know, a lot of work involved, a lot of thinking, a lot of research. And I think, you know, because I think, you know, Black people as a whole, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, information is kind of like, it's like glue, you know, it kind of keeps things in perspective. You know, the more you understand and watch your history and things like that, it can motivate you, it can do other things. But I think, you know, it's been a war against, you know, between, you know, different worlds, you know, I mean, as far as, you know, our perspective, European perspective, and of course, it's like everybody's trying to get an upper hand on each other, you know, that kind of thing. We know ancient, you know, Africa, I mean, there's, you know, history, I mean, there's proof that Africa is like, the African has been around forever, like, so, and the European is kind of like, hey, we're better than you, and we want to keep you down. So I think that somebody like Carter G. Woodson, who's trying to share, hey, these are our accomplishments. This is what we do. This is who we are. And so then it expanded to a month, you know. So I mean, the intentions of it is very positive, I think, you know. And I think that you know, as we continue to struggle and research and like I say, go toward the light, so to speak, then, you know, I think it's kind of like keeps you on track. Even I was hearing you talk about religion, you know, religion, it gets a bad break, because a lot of people weaponize religion and really, you know, but if you look at, I mean, if you go, you talk about ancient, I mean, truth is just truth. And so it's like, if you're looking at your code of conduct, how you conduct yourself, how you treat one another, you know, what is it all about? You know, at the end of the day, whether I was first at it or you was first at it, I don't think the African was arguing about who was first back in the day. But us modern day people, we have to defend that, because it's every lot of, like Brother Hembrick was talking, it's like things have been covered up. And so we take on, and like Rasta Key talks about, you know, we take on these images, we take on these ways of life, and that really is not our way of life. Well, it's not the human way of life. That's the way I look at it. You know, I mean, of course, you know, we can categorize, you know, races and things like that, but it was a time when people weren't even talking about race, you know. So at the end of the day, Black history has its place. It has its purpose. You know, it's positive. That's my, you know, I'm in agreement with that. So.
Okay. Sandra, you there? Sandra Henderson?
Brother Rob, before you go to Sandra, let me just mention what Brother Machinda was talking about, Carter G. Woodson, and his book, The Miseducation of the Negro. That was his book. And that was the start when he was at Howard. I just wanted to mention the title of his book, you know, and that's another thing our people need to do is read. We need to get reading. But anyway, I'm through. Go ahead on, Brother Rob.
Yeah, and he formed the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History. Now it's the Study of African American Life and History. Some of the followers have maintained it. I'll get to that in a minute. But Sandra, did you have any comment on the relevancy of history?
Yes, thank you. I feel that we should be celebrated every day. And being that February is the mother of Black history, we should really celebrate it in our homes with our children. Make up different activities when you have family times with one another, and celebrate with your kids about what Black history is all about. Then you can also go outside your home and take part in different events with your kids. But don't always, I don't think we, because charity begins at home. I don't think that we should always depend on the outsiders to teach us about us. And I think we should involve ourselves in starting at home, celebrating at home, because our people perish for a lack of knowledge. And these kids from the ages of 5 and up, they need to know. And I was talking to my daughter about that today, teaching your child about himself. But we would go and throw our kids out to the wolves, and they have no knowledge of what's going on around them. I don't feel that it's wrong to teach a child about racism. It's how you present it to them. Because she told me, Mom, I'm not going to teach my kid that, da 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 da. We all should be getting along. But see, the world ain't going to see your son like that, baby. They teaching their child about the color of their skin already, about African Americans already. I've seen, being that I work with kids back in the day all the way up until now, they start their kids out at a young age learning about the Black culture, and everything starts at home. And that's all I got to say for right now.
Okay. Oh, Sandra, thank you. Linda, you started a museum and virtual museum. What is your concept of the history relevancy of Black History Month?
Well, I always say Black, it's not a month, it's 365 days of the year is Black history. And then when you have a knowledge of self, you're going to want to share it with anybody and everybody. So I'm in agreement with everybody else has been saying, but I'm just going to stand on the point. Every day is Black history. And I mean, of course, I could go and talk to you in detail and break it down about the inventions and tell you how you use an invention every single day that's invented by a Black person. You give me a category, I'm going to tell you, tell me anything in the United States, and I'm going to tell you a Black person created or affiliated with it. But overall, still, every day is Black history, and we should be celebrating ourselves. And like Sandra was saying, you start at the home with your children, and not just the children, but also adults, because a lot of people have self-hatred. And as you were starting off talking with those police officers, and yeah, I feel sorry for them too, because it was just they didn't have a knowledge of themselves, because they never would even beat that man down like that and killed him, because that's it's just self-hatred. And I know Brother Hembrick was saying the knowledge of self. And once we do that and start teaching our children out of the womb to love themselves, and yeah, you Black, 1% of Black is Black. And I know you said about the quarterback, he's half Black, but no, he's still Black because he got a 1% of Black in him. Because Black is dominant and white is recessive. So again, since you said my name, 365 days we should be celebrated. Because I am Black history. Professor Ra, you Black history. Joe Henry, you Black history. Sandra, you Black history. We all Black history. And it's our job and our responsibility is to keep sharing what we know as long as it's truth.
All right, that's good. I appreciate that. Roger Key, what is your perspective on the relevancy?
Well, dealing in logic and mathematics on a consistent basis, if you take our history in the United States and with what happened in the Holocaust of enslavement, as you speak of, Professor Ra, we were stripped of our names, our history, our language through the process of the dehumanization, which you learn in Black studies. you go through a dehumanization process where they just take your humanity totally. So if somebody takes your humanity, which we were forced in this racial category for being black, you must reclaim the history that was yours and learn how to become back to the humanity that you had before you were enslaved. So it's important to have for self-esteem, self-worth, and all of the things that makes you a whole person, for you to know your history. It's important and indicative that we do know our history beyond the slave trade and all of that. And you should just, when you do know history, you can learn from the history what to do and what not to do. It a lot of things that's happened in our 200 plus years here, or 400 plus years, a lot of things have happened. So if we take that body of knowledge and study it, then we'll be able to do some things that will benefit us when we have all of these things that's not benefiting us. And this is why we come to a platform to get education beyond what we get in the classroom and through the American or the European thought process, which Joe Hendrick speaks about all the time. And I like that he do that, because we need to know that the present mentality that we build in is incorrect and not humane. So it's important that we know history so we can be able to make better decisions and be better people.
That's good. And let me just say, and I appreciate what's been said, if I understand correctly. I agree with what everybody has said. I just want to add a few things that, because I taught African-American history at Pasadena City College, taught ethnic studies and African-American history at Compton Community College, as well as I taught Black studies for 34 years at Cal State Long Beach. And like Joe, I couldn't use a lot of the content of the education that got me my degrees, but I learned the principles of study and research and how to present that information in a way in which students could understand why we teach the various subjects that we taught. And we taught a lot of things, you know, and it's through struggle. You know, Black studies didn't come because white folks say, oh, we need to. Matter of fact, they, like Rasha T and Joe said, they try to suppress our knowledge of self, as Linda would say, and take it away, as Rasha T say, and make it against the law to even speak your language, act your culture. And as Marcus Garvey said, the people, as Rasha T always repeat, are people that don't know their history and don't know their culture is like a tree without roots. Malcolm X said that the one science that rewards all research is history. There are many definitions of history, his story, HIS-STORY. That's how they used to spell history. And can't nobody tell your history like you can, like you tell the history of your family. And as Linda was saying, and Sandra was saying, history today. Because what we do today will become history. What we're doing right now, Rasha T is going to keep a record of it. And that's it. And so Dr. Karenga helped me get a better understanding. Because I came up thinking just don't like white people, and that's black. But loving black people and appreciating black people. And you say, well, you go outside, you look at some of the issues, you look at the news, you look at the brothers in gangs shooting and stealing from, out of the community, robbing, and domestic violence and drug addiction, and you say, oh, wow, I can love all your people. Well, you love them because they're still a product of the system, and they're still your people, no matter what they're doing or not doing. And I had to learn that and be patient with our people. I think some people in the scripture would say, forgive them for they know not what they do it. You know, I mean, that's the same thing as not knowing yourself, you know. And so we look at history, and as we taught, that it gives you some, it helps people get a better understanding of your humanity based upon your history. And it helps you get a better understanding of your humanity and the need for you to be more humane toward each other, the more history. And this is why people say they need to know their history, know their struggle. And that's what Al Sharpton was saying when he said, a Martin Luther King came to Memphis where they beat Tyree Nichols, and he put his life on the line and was martyred in there, fighting for jobs, city jobs, and that these police officers wouldn't even be police if it wasn't for people that struggled. And that was amazing. You know, I said, wow. He said, yeah, y'all, and then for y'all to do this, you know, in the backdrop of the struggle is wrong. And so how many kids could learn from history that you don't sell drugs to each other? You don't fight each other. You don't kill each other. You know, I had to learn that, you know, coming up, you know, we fought. As I got older, I said, I'm not going to fight black people no more. You know, I'm not going to argue with them. I'm not going to cuss them out. I'm not going to see them as, I'm not going to practice self-hate because they're me, you know, we're one. And so anyway, history gives you, with lessons, you know, the foundation of all understanding is, as Naeem Akbar would say, that history is, African-American history is quantitative, is based on quantitative and qualitative information. It's how much and what, you know, how relevant it is. Dr. Moringa says that once history gives you identity. Once you know who you are, it don't make no difference where you are. And that meaning that it gives you identity. You know that your anthropological origin is, as Joe would say, the continent of Africa. Europeans know that. I mean, Herskovitz, Leakey, Robinson, all of them went to Africa to study the origin of life, the Garden of Eden between the Euphrates River and the Tigris River. That's all of that. Is a part of Africa. Yeah, Egypt is Africa. Egypt is not Arabic. It's northern Ethiopia, part of that 12 million square miles of the continent. So you learn that. And that people like to focus on ancient history because there's a record of ancient history, a written record in the hieroglyphic. And I was... Brother Jabal called me this weekend from Florida. He's in town. I asked him to be on the show. He said he couldn't do it until March, but he's working on research. The one learned, kind of research the word you. Where did it come from? He's saying that it's simultaneous with Jews, using Jew, you. And anyway, he's doing some deep research. That on that word, he used to say, you know, where did this, you know the alphabet, but where did those sounds come from? Where did A come from? Where did S come from? Where did T come from? Where did R come from? And he studied it, and he did a linguistical study of research, and found that all those sounds were sounds that were made on the continent of Africa, and that the root language of Japanese, where he lived for 10 years prior to going to Cuba, where he'd been living for over 30 years, he studied the Japanese language and found out that it's rooted in Africa, and that you know, there's so much research he does on his own. And so anyway, it gives us identity, anthropological origin, geographical origin. It's the continent of Africa, and fossils and bones and artifacts that they dig up. The further they dig, the older the fossils are. And if you go to the La Brea Tar Pit, you have no problem studying the origin of dinosaurs. They say, look, here are their bones. They can tell you, based upon their studies, which ones were vegetarians, which ones were carnivores, which ones were flying, which one was that. They have all kinds of imprints. Well, that's the same way you study the origin of human existence. You go by the oldest fossil, the Xenanthropus fossil, the various forms of Lucy, as some Europeans call the oldest woman, named her Lucy. We can go all the way back. And then you use DNA. Now, DNA can be traced all the way back to the first humans and was a woman. And sometimes they argue that, you know, the first evolution of humans came from a woman that just reproduced without sex. And then it evolved. But there's arguments about that. And then, so anyway, but it gives you a sense of identity. Most black people don't want to hear about Africa. Africa is one of the richest continents on the world, and it's not only produced rich material. Everybody talking about the rich. Oh, it got the rich oil, it got the rich everything that go into cars in Africa, but you know, copper, cobalt, all of that, the chips that go in the computer, all that. But the most richest thing Africa produced was African people, because they were holistic. And Joe would say their religion goes way back, way before there was organized religion, and their spirituality. They used to talk to the trees, talk to the animals, got along with the animals. You know, they're the animals, and there were no fences. There were no territorial things. I mean, there were different ethnic groups, sedentary, some that were nomadic, and some were called Nileolithic people that lived by the river. All that type of stuff, and agriculture. They gathered food. They then tell their that's it. Then you got we call that the era of discovery, prehistory, that precedes. Even in Wallace D. Book, the Book of the Dead, the Anacalypsis by Godfrey Higgins, and the Book of the Beginnings by Jerry Massey, and all of them, they all say that Egypt, which is one of the classical civilizations, African civilizations, Ethiopia, and where the pyramids were built, that it was the people from the southern part of Africa that came up and formed Egypt, and that there are pyramids not only in Egypt but other places, even old men. So anyway, so you deal with that anthropological aspect, and then ancient history is the institutionalization of that culture, of that value system, as they became more prosperous and went from food gathering to food producers. They had time to think and get ideologies. And as Dr. Ben would say, they created gods and spirituality. Gods didn't create people. People created God. And then at the same time, they deified those based on their knowledge and their contribution to life and the uplifting of the people. Many Africans, Imhotep was deified as a god. Akhenaten was deified as a god. You can go all the way back to the deification. But God didn't mean a concept of a spiritual power overpower being, but it meant that you were blessed with an insight, hindsight, foresight that contributed to the forward flow of civilization, organization, and development of the people. You helped them get irrigation. You helped them deal with medicine and healing. You help them do as a group in small groups, and then it grew and grew into empires, and that's where Ghana, the Empire of Ghana, and all of them came from, and things of this nature. And it's well documented, the evolution of civilization and the evolution of coming from the wilderness of the continent of Africa, where they had signs and symbols of premortal man. John Snowward, I forget his church word, in his book, Signs and Symbols of Noah, of Africa and people, you know. So anyway, we go back and we say, okay, so you get identity, you know, and then you learn the lessons of history, what works and what don't work, you know, even in our families, you know, you have to be practical with regards to that understanding, and really, really, the institutionalize it in your practice, or you'll learn it, and then you forget it because of the day-to-day struggle of eating, clothing, buying, and doing this, and you sometimes forget the lessons that you learned. That's why you have to institutionalize it. And as Sandra was saying, teaching your family, teaching your kids is very important. And that's how we learn, because, you know, they outlawed us learning in this country. And now we're graduating from Ivy League schools and becoming presidents of universities, and then these are people that at one time was a law against us reading and studying, thinking and practicing our culture and things like that. So it gives you identity, it gives you purpose, it gives you direction, but at the same time, it also gives you role models to emulate. So you see a Martin Luther King. You see a Malcolm X, you know, and you take the attributes that they represent. His, you know, Martin Luther King, you know, when we was coming up, because Malcolm criticized Malcolm so much, and because he criticized the nonviolent movement, many of us from the streets wouldn't follow Martin Luther King and didn't like the nonviolent thing. We felt the self-defense, and Martin Luther King was the only one that came out with a position out the church. The deacons for defense were armed, and they believed in defending themselves. And the deacons they got a film out with Whitaker, I forget his name. So that came out the church as well as nonviolence. So most people think that all the Christian movement was just Martin Luther King and the nonviolence. Well, that's the big massive movement. But there were Black people that's in the church throughout our history, that those churches became fortresses, became places where they hid their guns, became pictures where they hid their weapons, and where they strategized. Harriet Tubman used the churches, and in other words, as sanctuaries and things of this nature. So there's a mixed history with church. Right now, it's the gospel of prosperity with mega churches and non-active churches in many ways. But at the same time, there are some churches like Reverend Wright out of Chicago, that was Obama's person. You know, he speaks from the ministry with fire and brimstone on Europeans. That's why Obama had to quit his church. Because, you know, he criticizing them and going at it. And then there was a Reverend Clee and Reverend who helped Malcolm X, as well as Reverend Combs, who started Black Liberation Movement out the church. And there were many things, but the most forgotten people that they don't like to talk about, and the European try to suppress that history of struggle, is the Deacons for Defense that ran the Klan off with Robert Williams and his wife. They had to retreat to North Carolina, where he made his transition. But at the same time, this brother was strong, you know. And then, those histories are very important. So it gives you identity, it gives you purpose, direction, it gives you lessons that we learn, role models to emulate. Malcolm was such a disciplinarian. him and Martin Luther King were straight A students in junior high and high school before Malcolm dropped out. And they both were chosen presidents of their high school, of their middle schools, or one of the schools. Because at one time, before the 20s, 1920s, it was just elementary and high school. Junior high didn't start until the 20s, the 1920s. And so a lot of people got their education. It was just basically the elementary went up, and then you went to high school. Very few people went to college. They went to work. But at the same time, that history is very, very much. So you learn identity, you learn purpose, you learn the beauty of people and your humility toward them. You learn that our women are, as Joe said, were matriarchs, are still matriarchs in many ways. They still, I mean, because there's so many single women raising children, that they're still matriarchs of the family. They may not be matriarchs of the political system, but they're generally the heads of their families. And, you know, some women have the knowledge and the wisdom and the instinct and the thing to play both roles. They can develop a young men to be men, young women to be women. And the importance of marriage, the importance of wholesome relationships and things of this nature. But at the same time, there's certain women that for whatever reasons they got off track or didn't or had to do what they had to do that some would think was, you know, unworthy. But at the same time, that, you know, you're not them. So when you drive down the street, you don't question why the sister's out there. You know that that's somebody's daughter, somebody's sister. So you don't solicit or you don't get involved in. You just, you know, hope that they get better and hope that they can get off those streets or wish that they would have taken more of an advantage of the opportunities that people struggled for them to have alternative lifestyles. But that's a whole new different matter. The thing is that you learn that role model to emulate. You learn Harriet Tubman's character, not just that she was a liberator. I mean, she when she got free, she didn't have to come back. But she said she wasn't happy because her people were still in the Holocaust of enslavement. And she said when she first got free, she was so happy. And then she got sad because she thought about the people that she left. And that's why she started going back. You know, that's a hell of a spiritual component of her character. And not only that, she was a nurse. She started food banks for the people, and she was just doing all kinds of things besides just, you know, leading people to liberation. So all that is a part of the history. And so you see women, and regardless of their size, regardless of their demeanor, you don't take advantage of them because many of them may not be as cognitive as we think, and you don't abuse them. And I think Minister Farrakhan said, when you go to prison, you see women in prison. Most women who are there because they was hooked up with a brother or somebody that misused them or abused them. And so, and Mashinda, who's worked with you, and he can tell you that the majority of the people incarcerated are young men, or in juvenile hall or in prisons and things, is young men. But at the same time, the women that are there are generally there because they were dealing with men that had them holding the drugs or holding the money, like a sister named Keisha, who Clinton pardoned her. She was a straight A student, got hooked up with this brother. She cashed a couple of checks, let him use her storage, and they ended up giving her 25 years to prison. She never touched the dope, never was involved with the dope. But in those times, that's when that new law, Clinton them and Biden them wrote, gave her 25 years. But then at the same time, he pardoned her later on. And the same thing with Trump. Trump pardoned Kirkpatrick out of Detroit, a minister that was, his mother was a congresswoman, and they got him for adultery and lying and some anything, you know, and gave him 33 years, but Trump gave him a pardon. He's a minister now. But anyway, point is that identity is very important. Black History Month started in February of 1926 with Carter G. Woodson and the Association of the Study of Negro Life. It was Black History Week, and Negro History Week started then. And his whole purpose was that if he could teach Black people about themselves, they would love themselves. And if he could teach the world about our accomplishments and achievements, or research it and bring it forth, that they would have recognize our humanity and treat us better. So he was trying to weaponize our history and use it as a tool for our development. He chose February because it was Lincoln's birthday, I think, and a couple other Black people, a month was in February. Some people say, well, why do we have to use February? Because that's a short month. They're cheating us. The white man didn't give us Negro month of February. Carter G. Woodson chose February. He started it in February of 1926. And so that's important. Now, it became a part of the Black movement, Black liberation movement in the 60s. That's when it really took off, and that's when we demanded and took the month and made it a month. And we made it a month because it was so much that we were discovering. And that's how Black History Month came about. No white folks didn't give us nothing. They never gave us Black studies. We tore up libraries and demonstrated and things of this nature. Now you got a bunch of academians that took it over, and you know they wouldn't even come close to the department when we first started it because we couldn't get a Black person with a PhD to teach in Black studies. I became the head of Black studies with just a BA. And I graduated in August, and June, and I was the head of the department in August. And we started from scratch. The white folks thought I was going to depend on them to help me run the department. I organized Black people, and we ran it. And that's why we became such an institution at Cal State Long Beach with the BSU, the Black Studies Student Association, an entree of masses of people that participated in the safeguard of us being able to function so that the European wouldn't move on us because we were in unity. And the students felt that it was their department. Now it's the university department. So, you know, it's a whole different thing. Even though Shirley Weber, who is the Secretary of State for California, passed the bill that everybody got to take an ethnic studies class. She's a former chair of Black Studies, African-American Studies in San Diego, longtime activist. And she's the one that's put forth the reparation bill that's up in Sacramento. That's her consciousness. And she's just a great person. I know her personally, and she's just a great person. I spoke at San Diego State when she was chair, and we had her at Long Beach State a number of times to speak. So anyway, those are some of the things, lessons to learn. We learn our lessons. And as Joe was saying, if we know those lessons, those deep lessons, mystery systems that where the Masons came from, the Freemason, the mystery systems of how the pyramids were being, they haven't figured them out yet. The mystery system of the spiritual, the deep, rich spirituality of nature, as Joe talked about. And as Rashi Key talked about, the need for unity and as Machina them work. So we got a lot to be proud of as Black people from where we were to where we are. We ain't where we want to be, and we ain't where we gonna be. But we are still struggling to move forward. You got to give credit to the activist organizations, whether you agree with them or not. You know, I have to sometimes, you know, some of the, I think they're reactionary, but like Black Lives Matter, I don't agree with no police. I think you need some police. You know, I'm for reform. I'm for providing more services, but you know, you need law enforcement to because you have to reward or punish people. You need people that deal with issues that we're confronted with. With freedom come responsibility. And so I'm not for the total abolishment of police. I'm for the total abolishment of bad police. I'm the total abolishment of police, militarizing police. I'm against all that. But at the same time, I disagree with the terminology defund the police. No, well, that it's like a lot of them said defund the police on school campuses. Well, you never taught on a school campus. You ain't been there when somebody pull out a gun and shoot a kid. You ain't been there when when there's fights that break out and the teachers don't go out there because there's so many fighting and stuff. You need people trained to break that up because the liability is a monster from that standpoint. But anyway, we're gonna talk a little bit more about Black history. One thing, and and I'm go around and say, Joe, you have anything you want to add? Are you there, Hembrick? What about you, Mashenda? Oh, there you go.
What did you ask?
I said, do you have anything you want to add?
No, not really.
All right, Mashenda, what about you?
No, I'm good for now. Thank you.
And what about you, Sandra? Or Linda?
No, I have nothing to add
What
except
about
on
you?
this again. I got this tape, but this is awesome.
Okay. What about you, Arashi?
No, it's a good, great job. I mean, we're back in Black Studies class.
Oh, we used to have a good time, but
Oh
joining.
man, you used to have a great time. Boy, we
Yeah.
if I was able to pull some of those cassette tapes out, boy, we'd be having a good time too. But no, this is good. We continuing it.
My sister gave me some of my earliest teachings, a whole bag full of cassettes, because we know we didn't have videos then. And I just got to get them transcribed. But man, I didn't know I said all the things I was saying, but I listened to some of them. But anyway, I want to thank y'all for listening today. Mashenda, we deeply appreciate your consistency and your regularity of participating in all our discussions and being a part of them, brother. And we know the time difference, and you work all week, and you come, me and Joe are retired, and Linda, but y'all are, I mean, you and Rashiki are amazing brothers, and we appreciate y'all. All right, Rashiki, go ahead.
Appreciate it, Ra. I get it from you.
Okay.
That's all I can say. Well, you want to tell? Want me to tell what we got next Wednesday?
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go. I'm gonna share it. There we go. Sister making it happen is the guest, and the topic is the impact of inflation within the Black community.
That's gonna be good.
Yeah. What we got? What about next Monday?
I'll call you again. I'm working on some projects.
Okay, good, good. All right, Rob.
All right then. Everybody, as the Rashi say, each one teach one.
Conscious corner.
And as what does the brother say?
We're gonna take a pause.
Yeah,
Rohan Marley.
yeah,
We're just taking a pause.
yeah. We say we're gonna say that for now. Taking the
Yeah.
ball.
Take
All
a
right,
pause.
take care,
All right.
brother.
Good night.
Good night.